Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
You're in the zone with Jason Anderson.
He's a good guy to hang out with. He's a good guy to work with. He's a good guy to confide in. He's got the characteristics of what you would hope that your best friend or a brother would have. And he's tough.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Talking about 2 out of 3 seasons ending a little bit before expected. I know for Mizzou, certainly the second round was penciled in to be a perfectly happy place to end the season, but you get Princeton there, and so it feels a little bit unsatisfying. Meanwhile, KU, with all the ups and downs of this season, second round exit might not have been the most outlandish thing in the world, but ultimately falling to Arkansas by just a point is certainly a difficult way for this season to come to an end. I'm Joshua Briscoe with Beards McFly. Jason Anderson out for a few more days here in the zone. But we're joined by Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World. You can follow him on Twitter at MC Tate, presented by 23rd Street Brewery. Matt, appreciate you joining us today. Just went through your post-game story up on KUSports.com, and that was sort of the feeling that I got, is that it wasn't necessarily a surprising way for the season to end from your perspective, but certainly an abrupt one for the players who are out there.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that's kind of the angle I took, because as much as there was talk in really the last couple of months, but certainly recent weeks, about this team really putting it together and, hey, could they really be a team to threaten back-to-back titles, first since Florida and all that stuff. I mean, that wasn't just Lawrence, Kansas chatter, that became national chatter. So as much as that all existed, it did still seem like a team that pretty much all year just had to fight through something. And I don't mean fight through something like, oh, poor them, they're going through a lot, let's take it easy on them. I mean, just it wasn't always lined up for them to, have this powerhouse juggernaut type team. I mean, they were undersized. They had no depth, hardly at all. They barely could play their bench. And when they did, it often didn't go well. And the times that it did go well, it was more of a shock than anything. And so, then you throw on top of that, obviously losing their head coach for the final 10 days of the season. And it just seemed like, one thing after the next throughout the season, including starting the season without their head coach when Norm was filling in then. Just something they had to overcome every single step of the way. And as much as it seemed like they did put themselves in position to really become a title contender, I think it was just as likely and equally accurate to say that, well, one of those things was probably going to catch up with them at some point. And it did. It really, in my opinion, was, and that's what I wrote today, was sort of the accumulation of all of them and the weight of that. Bill Self being out, as much as they handled it with class and did it as well as any team probably could, the weight of that was that final straw that just sent the whole thing tumbling down, and they just couldn't quite overcome all of it. And that's what happens. You have those things stack up against you, and you fight through them, and you fight through them, and you fight through them, but it's hard to do for an entire season and all the way to the end. And next thing you know, you're on the wrong end of a really tough score and a really tough game, and one you should have won, but one you didn't win.
And I don't even know if this ends up being a fair place to start specifically for the game, but I really like the idea that this was the straw that may have broke the camel's back here of not having Bill Self for the conclusion of the season for both tournaments. And obviously he was there involved in the preparation and all of that, but with what you were able to see from the team and to hear from the athletics department, everything we were all trying to pay attention to, what do you think the impact of not having Bill Self out there was?
I think it was big. I think it was really big. And that's not a knock on Norm or the staff or the players or anything. I think they all did a fabulous job, and they said the right things, and they handled it perfectly well. I mean, they continued to put the face on that said, no, we're confident. This is a program. It's a culture. It's Kansas basketball. We know what to do. They didn't lower their expectations at all when they easily could have, and they could have used it as an excuse the minute it happened. But credit to them for not doing that. And And then I think you started to see that sink in or seep through a little bit in the locker room after the loss, where, okay, now it's really emotional. Now we don't have a good face we have to put on because there's nothing next. Season's over. We can kind of let our guard down and put our true feelings out there. And you know, no one was blaming that directly, but you could just sense it. You could just feel it. You could just tell that those guys really wore that hard. And as much as not having him out there changed things, I think the pressure of really wanting to win for him to give him a chance to come back was also sort of cranking the screws a little bit and made them, you know, not tighter by any means, but just another thing that was added pressure in what's already a really pressure-packed situation in the NCAA tournament. So I think they exhaled when it was over, and at least I did anyway. I got the sense that, you know, that they really were affected by that. And that's as much of, you know, the debate about whether Self being on the sideline would have been worth another few points, and maybe that would have been enough, and that could have been the difference. I believe that's probably true. But also just, again, that heavy, heavy burden of feeling like, okay, we have to win, because if we do, he can come back, and we want him back, and he deserves to be back, and that's our guy, and let's go. Let's go get this for him. You know, that adds to it. It can add motivation. It can be a fueling thing. It can be a good thing. But it also can be pretty heavy, and I think, again, that's why I sort of viewed it as the final straw, because there was already so much they were trying to overcome all season long that, you know, you just put that one thing on there, and it just eventually is going to run out. I think it would for any team, and I think it did for these guys, and so I think it was very significant and very real. And you know, having said that, I'll say again that I think they all, from Norm and the rest of the staff, all the way down through the players, they handled it like champions, man. They really did. That is not an easy position to be in, and you wouldn't have known it was bothering them at all as the process went on.
It's a super imperfect analogy, but I said in the first hour that, like, look, Chad Henne did a fabulous job when called upon for the Chiefs in the playoffs twice. But also, getting Patrick Mahomes back was really, really important. I don't know. Again, it's a clunky analogy in a lot of ways, but it's the closest I could get to kind of, you know, you have different expectations, and no one's ever argued that Bill Self isn't super valuable in game. So it'd be kind of a wild thing to ignore, even though, like you said, I'm totally with you that KU and Norm Roberts in particular handled all of that really well in an impossible spot.
Yeah, and that, I mean, your analogy's, it is. I get what you're saying. It's a reach, I know, but I don't think it's terrible. I mean, I saw somewhere, and I'm sure it was the wonderful, wonderful space that is Twitter, but I saw someone compare it to, you know, hey, like, if you're a backup quarterback in the NFL or even in college, you know, that's your job. Your yeah. job is to be ready in case something happens. Norm Roberts' job is not that. He always knew that, you know, if something were to happen, and they obviously got a trial run with it for those first four games of the season. So, you know, he's aware, right? He's aware that if called upon, he's got to be that guy. They've talked about it. They've sort of planned for it, that kind of thing. But it's not like they go through day-to-day, week-to-week preparing that way, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been a couple weeks now or whatever. It's been almost 2 weeks. But, you know, let's go back to two Wednesdays ago or two Tuesdays ago, he was preparing for the Big 12 tournament with the scouting report for West Virginia because that was his job. His job wasn't to coach that game. It was to get the coach ready to coach that game. And boom, next thing you know, Self's in the hospital. Next thing you know, he's out. Next thing you know, you're the guy. And so that's very different than what a backup quarterback or a backup at any position. Yes. Has to do and is able to do when they're trying to take mental reps and, you know, that concept of always being one play away and things like that. So those guys have a little bit of a benefit of knowing that, okay, I'm going to think this way. I'm going to think like the starter. I don't think Norm very often thinks like the head coach. He thinks, how can I be the best assistant coach? How can I be the best guy that puts this scout together? How can I be the best guy to support Bill? And that's my job. And, you know, it It helped that he had head coaching experience from St. John's and Queens College. It helped that the players love him. It helped that, him himself have been together forever. I mean, there's so many reasons that, he was able to do it, but it still should not be glossed over as if it was just, you know, a picnic. I mean, that's an abrupt change, and that's a really, really significant thing that happened, not only to change your job and your role and, like, you know, snap your fingers and it's on, but also because you have to worry about the human emotion there, right? This isn't just his boss. This is a freaking lifelong friend, and you're worried about your guy, and then the human quality of being worried about, well, I'm about that age. I'm a little older, you know. Gosh, do I have to worry about my health? And, you know, all those things. I'm 45 years old this year, Josh, and that crept in with me the first time I heard about this. I was like, whoa. Man, you know, so you can only imagine if your guys around self's age, that it probably hit even harder with them. So a lot to it. And you know, none of this, I hope no one's taking this, and I know you're not doing this, and I'm certainly not either. No one's taking this as excuses for why they lost or excuses for letting them off the hook for falling or failing to get out of the first weekend. They didn't get it done, and they had the pieces to do it, and they were the better team that night, and they missed a couple free throws, had a 10-second violation, had all kinds of just poor execution moments that cost them that game. But excuses aren't worth making there, but I think, you know, having some understanding of how it all could have happened and maybe why it did, I think it's fair to throw that into there.
Yeah, because it's complicated. Like, there's very rarely a spot where you go, all right, tie game. Everyone's played perfect. Now this layup for to advance. It's never that simple, and that's certainly true in the tournament. And I do want to talk about some of the execution issues as well. You mentioned in the violation was just one that for me at least, watching from home, I'm like looking around trying to figure. No way, that's what happened. And then of course it is. Where do you look now when you do go back and you find some of the execution errors? Where I think you just said, you know, KU's the better team there even, but they can't make it happen. Where did the game get away from them outside of kind of the rest of the contextual stuff we've been talking about?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, that's where the coaching does come into play, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the foul trouble was obviously a big part of it. And, you know, any Kansas fan could just say, well, they got a bad whistle. You know, I think they did. I don't think that's wrong. I'm not sure any one of KJ Adams' four fouls was actually a foul.
God,
but having said that, Arkansas had three guys foul out as well, you know, and so I think the officiating was just bad. I mean, it was 48 fouls called or something incredible,
and I think
the officials, and particularly one official who I'd not seen before, not a Big 12 guy, I think he lost control of the game in the sense that he made a call that probably was not really, really celebrated by one team or the other. The fans are getting on him, and then instead of, like, just calming down and sticking with it, I think he got whistle happy and said, okay, well, I'll show you I'm in control. I'll make this call now, and I'll make this call now. And I think that spiraled on him a little bit, but, you know, that's really nitpicking, and it's certainly not his fault he didn't get the ball across, right, or missed free throws. So I don't ever like to do that, and I know most fans probably don't either, but I think it was a real thing. And so when you then look at that and you look at the foul trouble and you see that these guys, you know, had to deal with that in real time and within a very pressure-packed situation, I think at that point you start thinking, well, okay, let's see what decisions Norm will make, because as much as Self was there in practice and prepared the scouting reports and talked game plan and even, you know, scripted some stuff and all that, there's no way he was ready for what to tell them to do if KJ Adams gets his fourth foul with 18-11 to play.
Yeah.
You know, he couldn't have done that. And so at that point, it comes down to what Norm decides and what the staff decides. And I think that they lost control of the game when they didn't really know what to do there. I mean, they tried to ride it out. They put Zuby in. They put Ernest in. They even put Zach in. And they were trying to ride it out, and it didn't happen. So next thing you know, they're up 10, and then they go down 1, and then it's game on, and then the pressure tightens a little more, and I really thought that was a big part of it. Obviously, the run was magnificently big. You know, there's no question about that. But I think just the vibe that the run carried and produced and created. And then I think, you know, I mentioned a little bit ago the bench and the lack of a bench all year. Man, I think that showed up so much in this game, not just because they had to have guys come off the bench, but, you know, go back and look at KJ Adams' second or even third foul. Like, he had a very, very strong reaction of, like, what? You know, like, kind of chaos, freaking out, a little bit of panic. And that's not KJ, you know. I mean, I know his mom's worked with him on that, and that's, like, one of her biggest criticisms of him is, like, just stay in it. You know, don't overreact. Keep your level head. Don't freak out. And he's still young, and it's human nature some, but I think part of the reason he does, and maybe even some of the others in that starting five do as well, is because they know their importance, man. They know, like, I can't be on the bench. And they love their teammates. That's not a knock on them. They're not, you know, they're not being haters or anything like that. But they know this is a drastically different team when it has to go to the bench. And so I think that adds to some of that panic and some of that pressure and some of that vibe of just like, oh my gosh, this is getting away from us a little bit. And then, you know, that becomes contagious and everybody else feels that, and it just becomes a whole thing. I think that's why you miss free throws. You know, you're feeling that kind of intensity and pressure, and you realize the importance. It's not just step up there and knock it down like it has been all year. It's a much different shot at that point. So I think all of that factored into it. And you know, having said that, they even with that 11-0 run that Arkansas hit them with to take the lead. I mean, KU got the lead right back. You know, and all the way to the end, it was anybody's ball game with what, a minute 20 left or something like that. It was still tied, and at that point, I think KU had the ball with a minute 20 left, and you know, the tie ball game. I mean, at that point, advantage Kansas. You know, you're going to get probably two possessions, and maybe they're only going to get one, and you just have to execute there, and they just didn't. So, it was a wild game, though. It really was. I know you pointed this out, and I said it once already, and I'll say it again. I think Kansas was without question the better basketball team. I just think they couldn't put them away, and Arkansas has obviously a ton of fight and resolve and just tenacity, and you know they weren't going to go quietly. But there were a couple of times where I thought KU was really close to knocking them out, and I think DeJuan Harris's injury was significant.
Yeah.
I think if that didn't happen, and you know, you didn't really notice it. I certainly didn't in the second half. I thought he played all 20 minutes. I thought he played fine. He wasn't amazing, but he wasn't like on one leg out there, it didn't look like. So, but I think where it was significant was that, you know, they went into the locker room up, what, 8? And I think they were really rolling at the end of that half. They had their swagger. They were bouncing off the floor during timeouts. They were in control, and they knew it, and they felt it. And I think if DeJuan didn't get hurt there, they could have maybe cracked that thing a little more and been up double digits at halftime, and maybe that's a totally different game then. And maybe the vibe is totally different. In addition to, I'm telling you, man, it's been a long time since, like, this will go way back before you, but since Donnie Boyce at Colorado broke his leg in the Big 8 tournament at Kemper years and years ago, and it got dead quiet in there. When DeJuan rolled his ankle the other night and landed on that guy, it was eerie. It was absolutely silent in there. And that has an effect, too. You know, I think it wasn't – they didn't know. They're like, that in that real, very real moment, as he goes back to the locker room, they've got to finish the half still, and they're like, well – are we going to have our guy, or is he done? You know, and so there's just so much, man. It's just like, you know, everything has to be perfect for you to win 6 in a row, and you got to catch some breaks along the way. And it certainly wasn't perfect the other night, and they caught some bad breaks, and they created some bad breaks for themselves too. So if anything, I really think it's. You know, it's not an embarrassing loss. They lost to a good team. Nobody should be ashamed by that. This isn't Bucknell, Bradley. This isn't those types of losses, you know. But I think, if anything, it should probably put into perspective just how much respect and admiration we should have for last year's team, because it's just a reminder how freaking hard it is and how those guys managed to navigate those waters and found a way to get all the way to the end and get it done. I mean, it's not just Kansas. It's every team. Whoever figures out a way to win six in a row this year, they deserve so much credit and respect because you take something that's already really hard because there's so much talent out there throughout the country, and then you put it into this vacuum of just intensity and pressure packed and turn it all the way up, and you know, you feel that heat and all those outside influences and things like that, and it's a wonder anybody can even dribble or shoot a free throw. I mean, it's, you know, I would buckle. I know that, and I know you would too. Yeah. I'm not going to just wear that on my own.
No, we can share
you
that
would
one
too.
Yeah, absolutely. I do want to know when the last time you took your shirt off in celebration was, because I feel like that's something we can all relate to.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to say so I'll say it was not uncommon for me to do that in my younger days. I'm going to report now that I am happy to tell you that it's been a long time. And like, so long that I can't even remember, and that is probably the happiest I've been in weeks with a line. Because if I could tell you, I would be so full of shame and embarrassment. Just feel like, you know, I let my wife down, I let my family down, I let my friends down, everything. But I'm happy to tell you that it's been a while. And you know, I know that's taken some heat, and Musselman's, you know, obviously, you know, no pun intended, but wearing it over that one a little bit. I struggle with that. I don't love it. I don't think he needs to do that. I think it's a little cheesy. I think if you want to do that in the locker room, that's cool, maybe. Because we all know if he had done it in the locker room, it would have been on some Arkansas basketball social media channel, and it would have been pumped out everywhere, and the whole world would have had to see it that way.
Yep.
So maybe that's the way to do it. But, you know, it's also probably a very real emotion, just knee-jerk thing. I don't know that he was like, okay, if we win this game by a point,
right,
and Jalen makes a free throw that he's trying to miss,
and
then I'm going to do it. You know, so I think it's easy to trash the guy. It's easy to bash him. I'll say this, man. Like, at least he looked reasonably respectable with his shirt off. I mean,
yeah,
you know, that's you think about like Rick Majerus doing that or somebody. You know, like we don't need to see that, right? So give him credit for at least being in way better shape than most of us and being able to pull it off a little bit. It's still a little much, but I think anytime you jump on something like that and just start going crazy and railing against it and, you know, roaring with anger and all that, I just think you're taking it all too serious. I mean, the guy was having fun. He won a big game. I think it's great for Kansas fans. I love what Mitch said. Mitch Lightfoot on Twitter saying, you know, hey, good, congrats to Arkansas. However, let's remember my coach has never done that. You know, that's cool too. Like,
yes,
I realize that's very real. You know, Bill Self has not done that. And that's part of the difference between the two programs. But like, that you created that animal. I mean, when people beat you, it means that, it, even if it is a second round game. And I will say this, man, like throughout that game, and you know, you watched it and you probably felt it too. Like, that was not a second round game. That could have been a Final Four game. And it had that feeling, and it had that intensity, and it had that chippiness, and mm-hmm. and it was played at a level that was worthy of Elite Eight, Final Four type of stuff. So, you know, that's life. There's some tough second-round games. KU almost got bit in the second round last year by Creighton. But the crazy thing was that Creighton game, it was intense. And, you know, the KU almost lost that, and the urgency was there. But I it wasn't as high level as this. This was a really, really tough, physical, intense basketball game between two really good teams. And we'll see what Arkansas can do. I mean, they've got UConn, and obviously Kansas would have had UConn, and that in and of itself would have been a dogfight. And, you know, it's a tough road for everybody left, including Kansas State, who is holding the water for the Big 12 a little bit there, you know. Good for them and good for Texas. And I thought TCU was close last night. They almost made it through. And I think it is a shame that only two Big 12 teams made it. But, you know, I think that's, again, another reminder of just how cruel this tournament can be, how hard this tournament is, and maybe how it just because that happened, just because you lost to Arkansas in a game you didn't have your best, or just because the Big 12 only got two through, I don't think it should or even does erase, you know, what was a really good season, both for Kansas and for the conference. I mean, I think that's what people are going to remember.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, let's say Kansas State and let's say Texas both win this week. You know, now they're in the Elite Eight, mm-hmm. and you got 25% of the Elite Eight from your conference. And, you know, so it's still to be written a little bit. But yeah, it's a beast of a tournament, man. And I you know, even with the draw, I did not think that. I remember telling Jason that you know, last week that Kansas fans should be rooting for Illinois. And it turns out that was very, very right. But even with the draw, I didn't think Kansas was losing. And I still don't think they should have lost. I think they had that game won. They had Arkansas beat, and they didn't finish them off. And that's as much credit to Arkansas as anything, though. Those guys didn't go away. And my guy Davis was unbelievable, wasn't he? Jeez. They had nothing for him. Nothing.
Last thing before I let you go, Matt, I wanted to see if you'd take us back into the locker room real quick and just what reactions stuck with you in Des Moines. The players who were either holding back or letting go of the emotions or what it was, maybe even something that didn't have an easy spot to make your story that you were thinking about on the way back home.
Yeah, you know, number one is Jalen. I don't know if you guys, some of the TV cameras caught Jalen walking back to the locker room. I'm sure you've seen that maybe on Twitter where he, you know, almost doubles over and then he smacks the wall and he's got real pain in his voice and, you know, he can't believe it's over and it hurt. And so to see, I set that up with that because to see that, which is 100% how he was feeling, and then to stand in front of him at his locker and listen to him give, you know, 10, 12 minutes worth of good answers again. Mm-hmm. To me, that's what'll stick with me. I've been in that locker room 100 times. I've seen devastation. I've seen guys crying. I've seen guys on the floor. I've seen guys hiding behind hoods or towels or whatever that, you know, can't even face things. And understandably so. It's such a tragic and sad moment when it ends and you're devastated. But, you know, I just think this one, man, will stick with me as much, if not more, than the rest of those. And it has nothing to do with the sadness and the emotion. It has everything to do with the character and the maturity and just Jalen being Jalen to the bitter end, man. That guy was an A-plus throughout the season in every possible way. As a player, as a leader, as a teammate, as the face of the program, as someone who, you know, talked with us regularly and often. He never mailed in an answer. He never mailed in a press conference. He never mailed in a game. He never quit. He never did anything but give his best. And if ever there were going to be a moment where you would excuse anything but the guy's best, it would have been right there. You'd have said, yeah, if he's, you know, sitting on the floor of the shower in his uniform crying and doesn't want to come out and talk, who's going to argue with that? Who's going to tell him, yeah, no, be better than that? You know, everybody would understand that. But he didn't. He stood there or sat there and answered just like he had all year. And so that'll always stick with me, and partly because Jalen Wilson will forever go down for me as one of my favorite dudes to cover. I loved his game. I liked watching it grow. I liked the evolution of what he was and how he became a big-time player and how he appreciated it every step of the way. But I think this is something I'll always remember, too, because it takes real character to sit there and do that and you know, and to own it and to take tough questions and then, you know, and just give your best. Give the best answer you can for why you lost a game you probably shouldn't have lost. And so, you know, Kevin McCullough had raw emotion, lots of tears, puffy red eyes. That was a memorable scene and look, right? There were guys hiding, you know, but I think that the Jalen thing sticks out above all of it just because, like I said, it was him. He was true to himself and who he was to the bitter end, and good for him. That's you know, that's choosing your reaction, right? I had an uncle years and years ago who told me, you know, the best advice I was ever given. He's since passed away, and I used this on the day of his funeral in a speech to the people there. Like, we can stand up here and choose to be sad today, you know, but I'm going to choose to be happy because he taught me that you get to choose your reaction to everything. So I'm going to smile today. I'm going to remember him today. I'm going to tell you a great story about him today because I get to choose that. And that's what Jalen was doing in that very, very raw and real moment. He chose to be the guy he always was rather than to succumb to the pain and the sadness and all that stuff. And you know, I just had a ton of respect for him before that. And seeing that took it to a whole new level, even just in a short period of time, because that's big time stuff. But then the rest too, man. You know, Grady Dick, freshman, who knows if he's going to play another game as a Jayhawk, you know, probably not, but maybe. He sat there and did the same thing and was composed and handled himself. KJ Adams, same thing. Totally fine. I mean, and their reaction probably was as much shock as anything, right? Because I think fans probably want to see it hurt.
Yeah,
it hurts them. It hurts the fans. And so I'm sure they would prefer to see the Kevin McCullough look, right? Like, I want to know he's crying too because I'm mad. But I think in those moments when you're the guy, I think there's some shock. And I think KJ said that. I think he said it still doesn't even feel real. So, you know, you have to give him some credit for that. But I'm sure it hurt. I'm sure it hurt more yesterday for those guys than it did probably in that locker room, because that's waking up knowing I don't have another practice to go to. I don't have another game to prepare for. It's over. And that probably sucks as much as the real-time moment there. So, yeah, like I said, I've been in that locker room and watched a lot of Kansas reactions like that. And this one was one of the more impressive, really, because it was not just anger and frustration and just yelling and screaming and wailing and all that stuff. It was a bunch of really tough, classy, mature dudes that were handling it and gave their best in there, just like they did out on the court and just like they did all season. So nobody will remember it as a great year. You know, that's just not the standard at Kansas. Getting to the second round and losing isn't special, quote unquote. But it should be remembered as a great year, and they should be remembered as a great team, because they got a lot out of what they had, and they were missing quite a lot too. So for them to win the Big 12 and be a one seed and you know, truly enter the tournament as a real contender, I mean, that's a magnificent season and remarkable job by coaches, players, everybody involved. You know, now we see what next year brings, and it's going to look totally different. It's going to be very weird, and I would imagine that they'll probably be pretty good again, though. We don't even know what they're going to look like, but I think that's a safe bet right now.
It seems like it usually is. Always also a good bet that you'll be pretty good when you join us here, Matt. I appreciate you making the time for us this madness. I don't know if we're going to get you back around the horn again sometime later in the month. Well, that's a question for Jason, but as long as it's just me and Beards here, I'm happy to talk to you whenever you make the time for us. Appreciate your insight and your perspective on all that today, and we'll have to catch up again soon.
That sounds good, man. There'll be something that pops up that makes me relevant again. You know, don't worry. Some they'll get, like, you know, Michael Jordan's kids to transfer in or something crazy, and it'll be huge news. Or yeah, I guess it would be LeBron.
Where's Bronny? Yeah, can we get Bronny around here?
Jordan's kids are probably older than me right now, so we better not add them, or it'll be, you know, a whole different scenario. So yeah, no, I think there'll be something. That, you know, their work and yeah, their push for a title in 2024 probably started yesterday as well. They don't get good and stay good by taking a few days off. So it'll be interesting. But yeah, I'm always down. You know how to reach me, and thanks for having me all season. It's always fun to chat with you guys and give a little breakdown and also answer good questions. You guys always make me think, so I appreciate it.
When you always give us every syllable we could have bargained for. Plus, they're a football school now too, so I mean, we might just be getting you back on for a little football preview. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Thank you, Matt. We'll chat soon.
All right, man. Thanks. You guys have a great week.
You too. It's Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World, KUSports.com. You can follow him on Twitter at MCTate. Really just stupendous at putting everything that this season was for KU, the ups and downs, putting it all into a I would say a neat little package. I guess that's really not true. It's not neat, and it's not easy to summarize, but a fascinating, wild, up-and-down year that ends with a lot of complications and then a lot of emotions in the locker room, and then certainly, as Matt said, in the days following as well. I'm Joshua Briscoe with Beards McFly here in the Zone. Jason Anderson will be back later in the week. Meanwhile, we've got some audio we need to eliminate from our bracket of sound. We got to hit that at some point today. Plus, Ari Temkin will join us at noon to talk about KU, K-State, and Mizzou, and all of three of their results over the weekend. And then Mick Schaefer of KSHB 41 will join us at 1 o'clock. A lot of basketball, a lot of audio, a lot more still to come here in today's edition of The Zone on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Like, what is the touchiest thing you can think of?
A touchpad.
I thought for sure you were going to say me.
No, that would be gross and weird.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Thanks again to Matt Tate of the Lawrence Journal World, KUSports.com. Always an absolutely great conversation, putting all of KU's loss into perspective. If you are one of the people who occasionally wonders, hey, why aren't you talking about K-State more? It's because we're going to do it in a little bit, plus we open the show that way as well. We won't have the hours up on the podcast page till after the show today, but you can always get the entirety of The Zone up in the podcast page at 810WHB.com, in the 810 mobile app, or just search for The Zone, or perhaps The Zone 810, wherever you get your podcasts, because we're everywhere. And you can subscribe that way if you ever miss any of our conversations. Matt Tate, last segment, Ari Temkin coming up top of the next hour. And Mick Schaefer will join us in the 1 o'clock hour. But first, we got to make some headway here in the bracket of sound elimination as we had to say goodbye to a lot of teams over the course of the tourney. We are now down to, it appears to be a 16 sweet teams remaining, which means a lot of teams have exited. So we're going to try to chip away at this over the course of the show. Starting in the South, which is for us the Jabroni region, and we've said goodbye to a lot of great sound already. We start though, just top moving on down. Maryland bounced by Alabama. The Terrapins, number 8 seed, were represented by a truly great piece of an MP3 file.
I think she picked all the dog mascots though, so I'm not sure that's a great excuse for
no,
you.
No, it is. It was bad, but I have updated my strategy this year, and hopefully this time I can beat a 12-year-old.
So far, Beards is, I think, neck and neck with Chloe, who is 13 now. She's holding her own in the 810 Bracket Challenge, which you can check your progress on at 810WHB.com. Meanwhile, San Diego State advanced, and so they are all good to stay. But Furman, the 13 seed, we had them advancing beyond Virginia because the Zone knows ball. But Furman did go down to San Diego State, so we say goodbye to our number 13 seed represented by Furman.
Here's the 1-0. Swung on, there it goes. Deep left center. That ball is high. It is far. It is gone. But caught. At the wall. Caught by Tapia.
That's a good one. But so is Furman. A good story. Gone too soon. Meanwhile, we need to hit a couple here, Beards, because I think NC State, first and foremost, we have to say goodbye to a difficult loss here from SNL, the number 11 seed, NC State, represented by.
In high school, he was an honors student, and I got kicked off the team because I failed French. And English, too, but French sounds way better. And then when we were in college, I actually got kicked off the team because I tested positive for marijuana. So it just goes to show you, if you smoke weed and you're bad at school, you can win the Super Bowl twice.
It's good, but it's gone, as is the 3-seed Baylor, represented by.
Let's ride. Let's ride. Let's ride. Broncos country, let's ride. Broncos country, let's ride. Broncos country, let's ride. Broncos country. Let's ride.
Difficult to say goodbye to Baylor, but they shouldn't have lost so early. But first, they had to beat UC Santa Barbara, the 14 seed, represented by.
Hold on, that's not how this works.
My turkey call bounced in the first round. Meanwhile, we already have said goodbye. Well, it's time to say goodbye to Missouri, unfortunately. The tournament opened up in front of them, but they went down to Princeton, so we say goodbye to the 7 seed.
Oh, it's Whoa. Kevin.
All right, Kevin.
Oh, it's still Kevin.
Kevin! Disappointing, but gone. Which leaves us with Alabama, San Diego State, Creighton, and Princeton there in the South region. I actually think that might have... Are we caught up there, Beards? It looks good on my end here.
I think so.
I'm going to go ahead right now. We're going to do a little bit of math here, and then if we got it right, we can take a break, and maybe we're going to go ahead and keep our pacing up in today's show. But we still have Alabama represented by... you don't have to play them as we go. I'm just kind of resetting them here. Alabama represented by Travis Kelce, calling the mayor of Cincinnati a jabroni. We have the 5-seed San Diego State, which was Jason Zinni Matthews' impression into someone who hates fun, who we never learned about. The 6-seed Creighton is a surprise advancer to this point, as they got past Baylor. That's Travis Kelce's Sucre song. So Creighton advances and keeps an SNL Kelce bit alive. And then Princeton... Sorry, Mizzou fans, but that's a 15 seed. Travis Kelce and Jason Kelce talking about getting powerbombed in the house. Those are your final four of the Jabroni region. The Jabroni sound, the connection dropping, someone hitting fun, Sucre, and the powerbombing of the Kelce brothers. We got it. Okay, the Jabroni region has been reset, which means later on in the show we'll get through Kiki Leaks. It needed to be said, and we're going to at least save the McNipples region for when Mick Schaefer joins us, because it's his region. Everyone accepts that at this point. But we are going to have to say goodbye to some highly seeded teams here. Oh, I just realized what happened when Purdue lost to Fairleigh Dickinson. It's the first time I've not been excited about that game going the way that it did, because we haven't officially bid farewell to that one yet. And that one's going to be tough. But we're going to cross that bridge later. They're not gone yet. We're still holding on here in the zone. We'll take a break, come back, chat a little more, and then R.A. Timken will join us at noon to talk about some college ball. Mick Schaefer at 1. Joshua Briscoe and Beards McFly here with you on the zone, recapping a lot of basketball carnage, both on the court and in the bracket of sound.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Hey, Beards, how many times in the last 7 days have you gone to Slim Chickens? Do not make a joke. Say truthfully, how many times in the last 7 days you've gone to Slim Chickens?
Well, if we extend this out to last Monday, it would be 4.
That's, oh, my God.
That's
good Lord, man.
To the same place.
Oh, 5. No, I went to Lawrence over the weekend as well.
Oh, no.
On Sports Radio 810 WHB.
I know it's been a really busy show because of all the basketball and everything, so we haven't yet mentioned that the Chiefs signed Drew Tranquil. Adding a linebacker, kind of interesting, but did you see a tweet that I unfortunately found from his recent history?
I did, yes.
February 12th from Drew Tranquil. Man, that's tough. No way you can call defensive holding there in such a critical point of the game. Former Chargers linebacker, now a Chiefs linebacker. We'll talk about him maybe later today, certainly tomorrow with Adam Teicher. Can't call defensive holding. That point in the game was the Super Bowl. Previously a Charger.
Maybe he was talking about the Eagles on an earlier play, and he was just like, he'd rewound the game.
Wrong side of history. Hope he has better recovery on the field than that.